Hello, everybody, and welcome in to a special Sports Talk Chicago podcast. The name of the game is Major League Baseball today. We're talking about everything MLB-related, including the NL Cy Young Award race, which is something that I feel very strongly about. More so that Jacob deGrom is not the obvious winner, and shouldn't even be considered a winner when you really think about it, but we'll get to that in a moment. Plus, later in the show, we'll have a very special guest on. We've talked with him before around Hall of Fame time. He's a BBWAA member, so he has a say in who makes it in and who doesn't. We'll ask him, though, about the end-of-the-year award races, plus some postseason implications, and so much more. Before we get going here today, make sure to follow us on Twitter, at ChiTalkSports, and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, at JohnZags, and on Twitter, at JohnZSports. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Now that the 2018 season is over, get ready for 2019. Season tickets go on sale in March. You know what I don't understand about sabermetricians and those who idealize these fancy numbers and algorithms like war instead of looking at the plain old stats? The fact that, as much as they want to, they can't have their cake and eat it too. And this all goes back to the NL Cy Young Award voting, which pits Jacob deGrom of the New York Mets as the frontrunner for the award, despite having an 8-8 record. Now, don't get me wrong, deGrom deserves minimal consideration, especially because he's had one heck of a year. Sure, the 8-8 record isn't that good, but look at his ERA. It's under 1.70. It's actually the lowest ERA a pitcher has put up in a single season since Zach Greinke did it in 2015 with a 1.66 ERA. But does that mean, all of a sudden, that Jacob deGrom is the best pitcher in the National League? Well, according to those sabermetricians, of course he is. To them, it's not even an argument or a question. But guess what? If you're a fan of those incomprehensible algorithms and other manipulative statistics, it's time to drop some knowledge. Sabermetric fans truly adore, no, hold on a minute, worship war. They love that stat. They feel that it solves all of their problems, and it's a stat that idealizes on base percentage and runs scored. So, offensively speaking, if you don't walk a lot or cross home plate a lot, your war is going to be horrible. Why do you think Javier Baez, who's hitting nearly 300, leads the NL in RBIs and has almost 30 home runs, is getting less MVP consideration than Matt Carpenter, who's hitting 272? And by the way, the last MVP winner to hit under 280 was Johnny Bench back in 1971. So if you're one of those people who's a staunch Matt Carpenter advocate and thinks he should be the MVP, go back and look at history, then come back to me and tell me what you really think. But anyways, war is the rallying cry for anyone who believes in sabermetrics. Everyone agrees that war is the best way to depict player value and player talent. Well, here's the thing. If you're a staunch Jacob deGrom supporter, I ask you to listen up, because going to baseballreference.com, and by the way, that's how absurd the stat is, the fact that it's calculated in two different ways. That's why I had to specify that I'm on baseballreference.com, but nevertheless, going on baseballreference.com, you'll see that Jacob deGrom right now has an 8.2 war. Now, everyone claims, oh wow, look at his ERA plus at 220, look at his FIP at 2.03, and his ERA at 1.68. Okay, that's great. But looking at Max Scherzer, for example, Scherzer's war is 8.8, and Aaron Nola's war is 8.9. So, wait a minute. If you're a sabermetric fan, which is it? Do you believe in war and how a player's value is represented, or do you believe in the ERA plus and FIP? See, now you'll realize that, as a sabermetric fan, your beliefs are conflicted, because your rallying cry is war, but at the same time, every other metric favors Jacob deGrom. So what are you supposed to believe in? See, instead of becoming a victim of paralysis by analysis, why don't you look at the traditional stats and make your pick? Max Scherzer leads in innings pitched and strikeouts while having a 16-6 record. he has a chance to win 20 games. And Aaron Nola's record's 15-3, and he has an ERA better than Scherzer's, plus 177 strikeouts in 176 innings. You know, when you look at the traditional numbers, you'll realize that the picture's much clearer, and that it makes more sense to give the award to Nola or Scherzer as opposed to Jacob deGrom. And I feel that deGrom's candidacy itself revolves around his win-loss total. It seems as if everyone's trying to get him more consideration just because his record's 8-8. What about his on-the-field performance? What about the team that he plays for? Aren't those valid questions instead of sitting here and claiming that, oh, because of his record, he should get more consideration? In reality, this is just a ploy by people who believe in sabermetrics and who claim that the win stat means nothing. They're trying to abolish the meaning and the relevance of getting a win. And that's not fair nor right for a pitcher. I mean, last time I checked, if you get 300 wins, you're a Hall of Famer, no doubt. But I know for a fact that there isn't a rule that says, hey, if you're at 68 or 70 WAR, you're an automatic Hall of Famer. So if that's not the case, why are we applying that same logic to modern-day award races? That's why, to me, if anything, Max Scherzer or Aaron Nola should be the Cy Young Award winner. I'd be fine either way. I don't have a preference as to who should win. But here's one thing I do know. Jacob deGrom's candidacy, which has some merits to it, also has a lot of conflict and a lot of confusion. So for that reason, I don't think he should be the winner of the NL Cy Young Award. You know, it's funny to me how WAR is just severely corrupted, this NL Cy Young Award race. And if anything, it's corrupted the way in which we view players and value them. Now we're sitting here claiming that a guy hitting 300 is no good just because his on-base percentage is low. In my opinion, WAR hasn't done anything beneficial for the game. And now it's striking again in the AL MVP race as J.D. Martinez, Mike Trout, and Mookie Betts fight for the award. And get this for a minute. J.D. Martinez has a chance to win the Triple Crown. He'd be the first since Miguel Cabrera to do it, and before him, it was Carl Yastrzemski who did it back in 1967. So there's a lot riding on this. There's history on the line right now. Yet because of player value and all of these other sabermetric stats, J.D. Martinez isn't even a front-runner to win the AL MVP award. And the crazy part about all of this is that Mike Trout and Mookie Betts, they're the front-runners, and they've also missed time due to injury. Yet I guess when it comes down to a season-long award, it doesn't matter if you play most of the games in the season. That whole argument is so flawed. Go tell White Sox fans that about Carlos Quinton in 2008. Quinton that year was a front-runner to win the AL MVP, got hurt, missed the rest of the season, so they give it to Dustin Pedroia instead, who had an OPS of 869. Some wonder to this day what Pedroia did to deserve that award, while Quinton had an OPS of 965. He was right on top. Yet for some reason the voters said no because he missed too much time. Well, if that's the case, then why come 2018, now it's okay to miss games and still win the award? That whole argument just easily disproved the candidacies of both Betts and Trout. Now, I understand that some people are reluctant to give J.D. Martinez the award because he's a DH. He doesn't play the field too often. I've got two reasons right now that'll disprove that entire argument. Now, number one, it's not like it's Martinez's choice. It's not like he sits there and goes up to his manager and says, hey, coach, don't put me in the game today. I'd rather just hit. Boston has been gifted with so many capable outfielders that it makes no sense to sit there and stick Martinez out there. Leave his bat in the lineup and just play him at the DH spot. And number two, and I cannot stress this one enough, he's about to make history. This guy is about to do something that only one other person has done in 51 years, and that's win the Triple Crown Award. And to me personally, this is the fundamental question. How can you not give the MVP award to a Triple Crown winner? Because when Yastrzemski won it in 1967, he won the MVP, no question. And in 2012, when Cabrera made history himself, he also won the MVP. Now in 2018, because of WAR and because of advanced statistics, you're going to punish a guy for winning the Triple Crown. I mean, that's insanity right there. Look, Martinez hasn't missed time due to injury. He's going to make history for the third time in 51 years, and he's meant so much to the Red Sox and their success. So you tell me why J.D. Martinez shouldn't win AL MVP. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He began his sports journalism career in 1982 with Florida Today. By 1983, he covered sports for Newsday and became a columnist in 1990. Since 1993, he's been a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, covering Major League Baseball. Today, in addition to his time at SI, he's an analyst on MLB Network and a broadcaster for the MLB on Fox Sports. And just this past year, he's written a book covering the Cubs and their 2016 World Series championship. Please welcome Tom Verducci to the show. Tom, how are you doing today? And thank you for being here on the show.
Oh, I am great. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tom, I wanted to start today by talking about your book, The Cubs Way, which chronicled the rebuild effort under Theo Epstein and the team's eventual World Series win. Why did you decide to do this, and what can readers expect from the book?
I felt a strong obligation to write this book. I'm sitting here watching the Cubs go through the postseason run, not knowing, of course, how it would turn out with a Game 7 victory, but while it's going on, I'm thinking, I don't know if I will be able to cover a bigger baseball story in my lifetime than the Cubs winning the World Series. And I had written a lot about the Cubs in the previous years. I saw what the Red Sox had gone through after winning in 2004 in terms of how much importance that had culturally, not just the baseball fans, but to fans all over the country, especially in the region of New England. And I thought, I had felt a strong sense of obligation. I need to write this book. And of course, the Cubs, the team, is so rich with characters from Joe Maddon to Theo Epstein to Anthony Rizzo. I just knew that it would be a goldmine of information, anecdotes, and stories that I wanted to dive into. So it was something I really decided in the course of that 2016 postseason. And I think the best compliment I got for the book actually came from Theo Epstein. After he read the book, he told me, I really liked the book, and I learned a lot reading it. So for a guy who obviously knows his own team in and out, that's kind of the ultimate compliment. So to me, it's a chance for if you're a Cubs fan to relive all the magic, exciting moments of it. And if you're not a Cubs fan, it's a chance to learn some of the stories behind the stories that you may be on the surface familiar with.
And your take on the rebuild is interesting because, you know, in the MLB today, you've got teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, who always buy their way to success. In your opinion, is rebuilding more effective for a franchise, or is the Yankee way or the Dodger way the better way to go?
Well, rebuilding is certainly more cost-effective. Free agency is a very inefficient market in terms of bang for your buck, and you're probably going to fail more than you succeed. But in the end, if you're the Dodgers or the Yankees, it's quote-unquote only costing you money, and you're taking advantage of one of your great resources, which is a financial might that you have over other clubs. But in terms of the Cubs rebuild, I found it very fascinating that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer really focused primarily on getting position players first, which is really counterintuitive to what a lot of baseball fans might think, because everybody thinks everything begins and ends with pitching. And to a certain extent, it does, but their approach was, you know, we need to not only build a winning team in Chicago, we need to change a culture, which, as you know, people in Chicago are just used to losing far too easily and far too much. So they thought the everyday players are the one who can change a culture, and that seems to make sense. A pitcher can only get out there once every 5 days as a starter. So they really emphasized character, first of all, but especially position players, and they got the backbone of that by getting people like Bryant and Schwarber and Russell, and then built around that very shrewdly with some terrific trades. When you think about getting people like Kyle Hendricks and Jake Arrieta and Carl Edwards, they did a terrific job of finding under-the-radar pitchers and having them pitch better for the Cubs than they had been anywhere else. I think that's a smart architectural plan. Not easily copied, though, especially when it comes to hitting home runs on grabbing pitchers from other organizations.
Tom Verducci here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Tom, talking about the Cubs right now, they're on the upswing, owning the best record in the NL. What do you see as the reasoning behind this?
Well, I have to give the manager a lot of credit, Joe Maddon, because when you look at traditionally what he's done in Chicago here, this is a team that plays their best baseball at the end of the season. And, you know, if it happens once, it's a surprise or an anomaly. It happens twice, you say, well, maybe they got lucky again. But every year, the Cubs get better as the season goes on. And I think that's a credit to the front office certainly, but especially Joe Maddon and the culture that he's established on the field and in the clubhouse. It's a team that never panics, has a tremendous sense of confidence in who they are as a team. And now with the world championship in their pocket, they can lean on that experience. So I'll start with that. And then, of course, you have to add in most recently the trade of Cole Hamels. And again, we're talking about the Cubs going out and acquiring a pitcher who's been better for them than he was elsewhere. I think he had hit kind of a bottom with Texas. His numbers at home were terrible. His velocity was way down. And you get him out of the American League. You get him out of the ballpark in Arlington. And you do some things mechanically where now he's throwing the ball harder than he has in 4 years. You got yourself an ace who, let's face it, was out there on the market not generating a ton of interest because he was not pitching well. So once again, give credit to the Cubs for seeing something in a pitcher that maybe others didn't.
Do you think that Hamels moving to a contender maybe also played a role in revitalizing his career?
Well, there's no doubt that that is a factor. You get anybody out of, I don't want to say a dead-end situation, but a non-competitive situation in terms of postseason play and get them back in a pennant race, especially someone like Hamels, who's seen the very best of postseason play, you're going to be invigorated. But I will tell you this, that only takes you so far. And to me, it's more about culture that the Cubs have. And I mean that sort of in a fundamental way in terms of their game planning, you know, what they do with breaking down opponents, what they do with scouting their own players and suggesting tweaks in their mechanics and their approaches. The fact that Cole Hamels now is relying much more on his four-seam fastball than his two-seam fastball, that's not something that's just psychological, like, hey, it's great to be a pennant race. That's something very tangible and specific, and the Cubs are really good at finding those alterations for players.
Staying in the National League, let's talk about this highly contested Cy Young Award race. It's pitting DeGrom, Scherzer, and Nola against each other. Now, you're a member of the BBWAA, so you kind of have a say-so in this race. You have some influence. If you had to vote today, who would you pick to win the NL Cy Young Award?
Well, let me start off by saying that I'm glad I don't have to vote today because it truly is up in the air. It's kind of like asking people when the movie's about three quarters of the way through it before the big ending comes up, well, how do you like the movie? Well, can we wait to have the movie play out? Because I do think this is literally going to come down to the last start. And I really do mean that. I remember a few years ago where Felix Hernandez, to me, lost the Cy Young because he had one bad start at the end in Toronto. I think it's that close. But if the season did end today and they asked for ballots today, my vote would go to Jacob DeGrom, because I think the difference in his ERA is greater than whatever advantages that either Aaron Nola or Max Scherzer has on DeGrom. It's too much for me to ignore when it's almost a half a run difference in ERA. The fact that Jacob's pitched so well virtually every single start this year, it's an all-time record of going out there and allowing just three runs or less start after start after start, or at least in recent years. And I think, and when it comes to Cy Young, I will take the standings out of the equation. In other words, I think with the MVP award, it's more about the context. What's around you? Are you pitching in important games? Are you playing in important games? Whereas the Cy Young, to me, just goes to the best pitcher. And right now in the National League, I would say by a little bit, it's Jacob DeGrom.
You're looking at the AL Cy Young Award race now, and it seems like no one wants to win the award. Everyone's getting hurt at, you know, the time in which voting is about to occur. Do you see Chris Sale as the favorite despite all of his missed time due to injury?
I do think he's the favorite, but I thought that was the case at this time last year, and he kind of wore down in September, as has been in his history, and he lost the award. And I do think now that his volume of work is going to make it difficult for him to win, depending on when he gets back. Because, you know, to me, volume is really important. I know we're all in love with great stats. You know, batting average against and ERA and strikeouts to innings pitched. But to win that award, man, you got to post up mostly every start of a season. And that's why I think if his innings total is not up there among the very best in the league, I think he begins to lose support for the award. That's why I've got my eye on Drew Smyly of the Rays. You know, a lot of people weren't on him early. And I know the Rays have gotten a lot of attention with their, you know, this the new way of pitching they have with just the opener pitching, basically a relief pitcher starting a game. But Drew Smyly is an old school starting pitcher putting up some really impressive old school numbers. And, You know, he stayed healthy this whole year. I think it's his first full year getting up into the 30 start range by the end. So let's see how he holds up in September. But keep your eye on, I'm saying Drew Smyly. I mean, Blake Snell, I get them confused, left-handed for the Rays. Blake Snell, to me, might be the sleeper candidate to win this award. And again, people haven't paid much attention to the Rays, but Blake Snell is putting up some incredible numbers, especially at home this year. For whatever reason, his home numbers are terrific. So I would say right now I would lean towards Chris Sale, but by the end of the season, it might be Blake Snell.
You know, you're talking about the Rays, too, and their opener approach. I mean, quietly, the Rays are almost 10 games over 500. Do you see the opener as an effective approach to winning a baseball game?
Well, it certainly is for the Rays. I don't think it's something that's going to be copied in terms of a widespread acceptance in the game. I think the preferred mode is still go get yourself a deep starting staff so pitchers can go 6-7 innings into a game and save some wear and tear in the bullpen. But, you know, when you don't have that kind of rotation, I think this is a good option. And it's certainly proving to be that way. I mean, you go back, you know, the Rays get off to a slow start. You go back to the middle of April, and the Rays have one of the best records in Major League Baseball. You know, the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Astros, and the Yankees are better than them, but that's it. So this is not like they've just gotten hot just especially recently. You know, this has really worked for them throughout the season. They're a 500 team when their starting pitcher goes two innings or less. And typically the major league percentages, you're only going to win about a quarter of a game when your starters go two innings or less. But they've built in for this. Their pitchers have actually held up well, which I'm surprised at. I thought maybe some attrition would affect some of their relief guys, but it's a very smart thing that the Rays have done. I'm not sure it's attractive in terms of making baseball, you know, something that's more interesting to fans. It's interesting from a strategic standpoint, but if this is the future of baseball, I don't think it's going to attract a lot of fans because I think there's too many relief pitchers in the game as it is, and we're losing some of those big-time marquee starting pitchers. I personally wouldn't want to root for that to be widespread, but I really applaud the Rays for taking this approach and making it work.
Now, looking at this weekend, I know that you're in Philadelphia covering the Cubs and Phillies series, which can have some implications as the Phils, they're fighting for a playoff spot themselves. What's intriguing you the most about this three-game series this weekend?
Well, two teams going in opposite directions recently. You know, the Cubs certainly right now the best record in the National League seem to be peaking at the right time. And I think the Phillies are kind of hanging on. Their bullpen started to leak oil in August. The thing that really surprises me about Philadelphia is they've been able to stay in contention with one of the worst defensive teams in the major leagues. I mean, that typically doesn't add up. I mean, pitching and defense, to me, are intertwined. You can't really separate them out. But right now, they're surviving despite, as I said, really a far below average defensive team. They don't have an above average defender at any position on the field. So give credit to Gabe Kapler and this Philadelphia team. They basically have done it by hitting a lot of home runs, especially at home. But it's an important series for the Phillies because they've been able to kind of survive in the last week or so without Atlanta getting super hot to open up enough of a gap in the East. And remember, they have 7 of the last 10 or 11 games against the Braves. So they need to stay within just shouting distance, the Braves, really. But to me, it's more important, much more important to Philadelphia than the Cubs because the Phillies are home. They need to reestablish some winning ways here, and they need to find ways to win games when Aaron Nola doesn't have the ball.
And speaking of the Phillies, you know, they're right in the middle of this NL wildcard race. Who do you see capturing those top two spots? Because right now we've got Milwaukee and St. Louis up there, but the Dodgers, Rockies, Diamondbacks, they're all straight behind them. Who do you see winning those top two spots come the end of the year?
Yeah, it's a great race, and I hope it stays this close down to the end. I mean, there's nothing better in baseball than really a great pennant race involving multiple teams. The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. So right now, I would lean towards the Cardinals because they've just been so hot in the second half of the season. Their young pitching has been really, really good. They're playing with a ton of energy and confidence. That's, to me, picking the Cardinals is riding the hot hand. And then I'd probably go to the L.A. Dodgers. I'm saying the Dodgers because I have a lot of faith in the Arizona Diamondbacks to win the actual division in the NL West. They've played very well head-to-head against the Dodgers. They have, actually, for the last couple of years. They've been the steadier team for me over Los Angeles, but it's hard for me to say the Dodgers, with their payroll, the depth of their roster, will be on the outside looking in. But listen, I have a ton of respect for Milwaukee. I wish they would have made a trade for a starting pitcher rather than two infielders at the deadline, because I think that has been their Achilles heel. But it's a great offensive team. It's a fun team to watch play baseball. They'll be in it to the end. So, as I said, I mean, baseball has really needed one of these really great multiple team races, I think, for years, because there's nothing that commands it in sports like the everyday nature of a pennant race. You know, you're up and you're down on a day-to-day basis. I'd love to see all those teams hanging there till the end.
So let's fast forward to October, and I know I'm jumping the gun a bit here, but who do you see winning the World Series? If you had to choose today, who'd be your team, who'd be your pick to win it all this year?
Well, I'll have to stay on my preseason pick since that's still in play. My preseason pick was the Cubs over the Yankees in the World Series. And, you know, I still like the Cubs a lot. It's interesting. I like the Cubs because of the addition of Darvish. Now it turns out that maybe Hamels will be playing the role of Darvish come October, because I thought Darvish could be a difference maker as a starter in a playoff environment. But, yeah, the Yankees, to me, hit a tough patch here. I mean, it's tough for me to stick with them unless Aaron Judge not only gets back, but shows that he can be the same hitter. I'm a little bit worried about that because, you know, it's been longer than they thought with his chip fracture in his right wrist. And wrist injuries are always scary for power hitters. And I wonder if and when he gets back how strong that wrist is going to be, how effective he's going to be. But as you've seen in August, they're a different team without him in the lineup, and they need to hit home runs to beat people, and they need Aaron Judge to do that. So if you told me Judge is going to come back and be a force again, listen, it's going to be tough for anybody to get through Boston and Houston. I certainly don't want to slight those two teams because they've been the best in the league the whole year. But as I said, when you go out and you pick two teams in spring training and they're still in the mix, you can't jump off the train just yet.
And on a final note, this past May, you won your third Sports Emmy Award for Outstanding Sports Personality and Sports Reporter. How much does this honor mean to you?
Well, it means a lot to me. I mean, I was someone who started out, all I wanted to do in this business was to write. I loved writing and loved baseball, and it was something that I've wanted to do ever since I was a small child. So to have the opportunity to do any kind of television work, that in itself has been a bonus and a blessing for me, and then be recognized in such a way on the highest level, it truly is and literally is beyond any dreams that I ever had. So yeah, to me, to win one is great. Win two was sort of a confirmation that I must be doing something right. And so to win a third one is just it's really humbling, to be honest with you, because there's so many people out there who are so talented and so good at it. I appreciate every single one of those.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there you have it. Tom Verducci and I had a great conversation. We talked about everything going on in Major League Baseball, including the contested NL Cy Young Award, some Chicago Cubs baseball, and who he thinks will win the World Series in October. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Chi-Talk Sports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Make sure also to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site, type in your email, then click Confirm on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new article and podcast directly to your inbox. And finally, make sure to find us on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018 calendar year is now available. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.